जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी, जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी, गोपीजना वल्लभ गिरिवर शोदानंदन व्रज जनरंजन यमुना तीरवन यमुना तीरवन जय गोपी जनवल्लभ गिरिवर शोदानंदन ब्रज जन रंजन यमुना तीरवन चारी यमुना तीरवन चारी माधव कुंज बिहारी, जय ओम विष्णुपाद परमहंस परिव्राजकाचार्य अष्टोत्तर शत श्री श्रीमद इज डिवाइन ग्रेस इसी भक्ति वेदांत स्वामी श्रील प्रभुपाद की जय, अनंत कोटि वैष्णव वृंद की जय, ग्रंथराज श्रीमद् भागवतम की जय, ऑल ग्लोरीज टू द असेंबल्ड डिवोटीज, ऑल ग्लोरीज टू द असेंबल्ड डिवोटीज, ऑल ग्लोरीज टू श्री श्री गुरु एंड गौरंग। मदर वेरोनिका, सिंस यू आर राइटिंग द वर्सेस, we only write the verse that has a purport to it. Narayanam namaskritya naram chaiva narottamam devim sarasvatim vyasam tato jayamudirayet nashtaprayesha bhadreshu nityam bhagavata sevaya भगवती उत्तम श्लोके भक्तिर्भवति नैष्टिकी। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ग्रंथराज श्रीमद् भागवतम कैंटो 6 चैप्टर 7 इंद्र ऑफेंड्स बृहस्पति। हियर वी हैव टेक्स्ट 38 37 व्हिच हैज नो पर्पोर्ट एंड देन 38 which has a purport. तथापि न प्रतिब्रूयाम् गुरुभिः प्रार्थितं कियत् भवतां प्रार्थितं सर्वं प्राणैरर्थैश्च साधये तथापि न प्रतिब्रूयाम् गुरुभिः प्रार्थितं कियत् भवतां प्रार्थितं सर्वं प्राणैरर्थैश्च साधये तथापि न प्रतिब्रूयाम् गुरुभिः प्रार्थितं कियत् भवतां प्रार्थितं सर्वं प्राणैरर्थैश्च साधये तथा अपि स्टिल न नॉट प्रतिब्रूयाम आई मे रिफ्यूज गुरुभिः बाय पर्सन्स ऑन द लेवल ऑफ माय स्पिरिचुअल मास्टर प्रार्थितम रिक्वेस्ट कियत् ऑफ स्मॉल वैल्यू भवताम Of all of you, prarthitam, the desire, sarvam, whole, pranaihi, by my life, arthaihi, by my possessions, cha, also, sadhaye, I shall execute. Translation and next verse and purport by Srila Prabhupada ki jai. All of you are my superiors. Therefore, although accepting priesthood is sometimes reproachable, I cannot refuse even a small request from you. I agree to be your priest. I shall fulfill your request by dedicating my life and possessions. Text 38. Sri Shukadeva Goswami continued, O King, after making this promise to the demigods, The exalted Vishwarupa, surrounded by the demigods, performed the necessary priestly activities with great enthusiasm and attention. The word purport. The word samadhina is very important. Samadhi means complete absorption with an undiverted mind. Vishwarupa, who was a most learned Brahmana, not only accepted the request of the demigods, but took their request seriously and performed the activities of priesthood with an undiverted mind. In other words, he accepted the priesthood not for material gain, but to profit the demigods. Such is the duty of a priest. The word puraha means family, and hita means benefit. Thus the word purohita indicates that the priest is the well-wisher of the family. Another meaning of the word pura is first. A priest's first duty is to see that his disciples benefit spiritually and materially by all means. Then he is satisfied. A priest should never be interested in performing Vedic rituals for his personal benefit. Om Ajnana Timirandhasya Jnananjana Salakaya Chaksurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Mano Vishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamahyam Dadati Swapadantikam Vancha Kalpataru Vyascha Kripa Sindhubhya Evacha Patitanam Bhavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Srivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare 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 Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare I'll try to keep this simple and short for today. Those persons who perform Vedic rituals on behalf of the public are called Purohit. So a Brahmana who performs these rituals is called a Purohit. Puraha has two meanings from what we hear from the purport. One, it means family. And hita means for the benefit of or for the welfare of. And pura also means first. So one who puts the welfare of others in a priority position than his own welfare, such a person is called purohit. We are in Kali Yuga, if you have not noticed. And in Kali Yuga, there are two categories of people. One who don't know anything. Nor do they want to do anything for themselves. They're just too oblivious to anything. They're caught up in the day-to-day circumstances of life to such a degree that they cannot think of anything beyond those circumstances. And there's the second category is of persons who only think about themselves. This is passion and ignorance, said differently. In passion, a person is only thinking about themselves. They are into what we call the WIIFM program. WIIFM means what's in it for me program. That's all they care about. Even if they want to do good for someone else, all they care about is what's in it for me. If I get something out of it, yes. If I'm not going to get anything out of it, no. These are the only two categories. And there is a rare third category, which is we call endangered species, the Brahmanas, those who are in the mode of goodness. It's very rare. Because in the Bhagavatam it is described, Kalau Satvaharam Pumsam, that Kali Yuga is such a time that it steals away goodness from people. Haram. Haram means to take away. It takes away any semblance of goodness. Even if someone wants to do good, the environment is so surcharged with selfishness that they cannot do it. For example, doctors. When they're young and they're just joining medical school, they have this great desire that I want to benefit human society. I want to work for researching such medicines and drugs that can cure disease. Once they become doctors and they see that their friends are all into making money quickly, all their social ideas go out of the window. They have to keep up or they won't survive. Honest doctors can't survive too long. Or lawyers. Of course, the profession itself has a problem, right? Lawyers or politicians. There are young people who see that there are social issues and they want to make a difference. And part of that social issues, they feel that they can make a change when they take to political office. And as soon as they enter politics, finished. All sense of doing good vanishes because the environment is surcharged to such a degree with selfishness that they cannot do much. And in such a context, there are these Purohits. Those who are genuine Brahmanas, they want to do good for others. And they take that to such a level of seriousness. It's not just doing good for others in an ordinary sort of way. Here Vishwarupa says in this verse, last line, Praner Arthaischa Sadhaye. Prane, I'm going to give my life to this sacrifice. And Arthe, all my possessions. Generally, a person does something for two reasons. One is to preserve life. We do everything we do is to preserve life. Eating, sleeping, mating. Of course, if one doesn't mate, one will die, correct? It's death. What's the use of living if we cannot mate? It's a joke. You guys are... And defending. Defending is for preserving life. And to gather possessions. Because the more we gather possessions, the sense of security in this life. Oh, I have more, I feel good. They have less, I feel even better. It's a sense of possessions. And here Vishwarupa is saying, I'm going to offer my life and possessions. The Brahmana, Vishwarupa doesn't have possessions like, you know, a sofa, car, all of that. His possessions are his Brahmanical qualities, Brahmatejas, which is required for performing this sacrifice. Actually, in a sacrifice, it's the Brahmanical power that is invested and benefited by the sponsors. The sponsors are called Yajamana. And Yajamana means usually guest or sponsor. They sponsor the sacrifice and the Brahmana, he performs it on their behalf because they cannot do it. Those who are sponsors, they don't have the Brahmanical quality or the required Brahmanical credit to perform sacrifice, to light a fire. But the Brahmana has. So he takes that risk that on their behalf, I will perform this sacrifice such that they may benefit. There is risk involved in being a Brahmana like that. Especially when marriages are conducted, for example. The Brahmana, it is under his authority or protection, if you will, that the marriage ceremony is conducted. And later, if the wife and husband fight with each other or they get separated or divorced, then the reactions go to the Brahmana. Or they don't follow regulative principles like that. So it's risk. But the Brahmanas, their life is about taking risk. When I say Brahmana, in your mind, parallelly think of devotees, like the Hare Krishna movement devotees. I'm speaking in context, but expand that. We take risk for others every day. One of the biggest risks that we take as devotees is that we give spiritual advice to others. It's a big risk. Because people in general are so steeped in sense gratification, in their own problems, and they're not so elevated, if you will. Not so elevated, not like pure devotees, but just not elevated enough. That when you give them advice that says, please stop sense gratification, the first reaction we get from them is they become angry. Very good. Very good. They become angry. It is described, it's a saying, you give a fool good advice and he becomes angry. In Mahabharata, Duryodhana, although was considered intelligent, was considered foolish from a spiritual perspective. And every time he was given good advice, he became angry. He became angry at his father, although his father really couldn't give him good advice. He became angry at Vidura. He became angry at Krishna because their advice was interfering in his sense gratification. Yet the devotees take that risk. They give advice. They try to help someone. Sometimes, if someone's heading towards the cliff and you stop them in their tracks, then they become angry. Who are you to tell me what to do in my life? I will jump off the cliff. Why does it bother you? And the devotees will say, my gosh, it's going to hurt you. But why do you care? If I push you, then you can protest. But I'm jumping out of the cliff. I'm going off the cliff. What do you care? It's like that. So the devotees take risk all the time. They take the risk of going, and we say intervening. Generally, it is described that bhakti begins by the intervention of a devotee. Actually, it is by the interference of a devotee. Because most people feel that the devotees are interfering in their life, not intervening. Intervening is a nice thing. Interfering is, why are you interfering in my life? But the devotees interfere. They say, hey, what are you doing? This is not nice. Stop this, please. Including the learned people. Srila Prabodhananda Saraswati describes that one should interact with the greatly learned people like this. First, they should be offered some flattery. Wow, you're so learned. You have such deep understanding of the subject matter that you're talking about. Your learning is spread far and wide. People know you so much. And when the so-called scholars get flattered, then Prabodhananda Saraswati says, then we should say, now you please throw it all into the dark garbage bin. And please listen to what Lord Chaitanya has to say. Still, it's an interference. And for this interference, Krishna says that my devotees are very dear to me. This is the end of the Bhagavad Gita. That one who shares this knowledge of Bhagavad Gita with others, they become very dear to me. Why? Because we're taking risk. Someone took the risk for us. True, we're here because someone else took some risk of giving us some advice at the risk of we becoming angry at them. Sometimes our anger is such we even throw stuff at the devotees. We throw physical objects. If not, we throw our words definitely. But they took that risk. And so, since someone took risk for us, it behooves us to take some risk, calculated risk, for others. Of course, we cannot take risk that's not calculated or measured. Like Lord Nityananda would enter the bars and shake up all the drunkards and ask them to chant Hare Krishna. We may not be able to take such a risk. So we should be careful what risk we can take. We can take risk according to our realization. But risk we must take. That is meaning of this word, purohita, putting others' welfare first. Now in the context of performing pujari services, that's also called purohita service. Now pujari, when they're on the altar and they're offering worship or dressing the deities, they should understand that they are doing this for the benefit of others. Of course, they are also benefited, no doubt. But how they live, what they do, the whole thing, not just when they're on the altar, but more importantly when they're not, how they're living, what they're doing, what they're speaking, etc., all gets accumulated into the benefit for others. So when the devotees look at the beautifully dressed deities, they feel a sense of upliftment. And benefiting others means whatever prasadam comes from the altar is not meant for the brahmanas to enjoy. It is meant for giving. Generally, there's a tendency, especially festival times, the deities are given special garlands, you know, special flowers, something, mahaprasada, bhoga that's made in a very special sort of way. And those who have access to the altar, they feel, after the worship is over, I will keep this garland, I will keep that offering. This is very bad, actually. It corrupts the brahmana or the purohit completely. It should be for giving, as much as possible, giving it away, not for keeping. You know, there used to be a phenomena in our temple, I don't know if you know, even recently, we used to offer samosas on Sunday nights, because the samosas come for a bake sale. So the samosas the devotees used to make before, earlier the brahmanas would make, so they would come on the altar. And after the offering is removed, the mahaprasada was supposed to go down. And literally every Sunday, the samosas vanished between this floor and that floor. We don't know where they went away. We tried many ways. And you know, it's not the pujari necessarily, because I don't know if it's a pujari. The pujari is very sweet, Mataji. But somehow, Sunday after Sunday after Sunday, the samosas would vanish. And it's not like there were many, there only were 8 of them, but they would vanish. So I wonder, what's going on? Or festival times. I remember Janmashtami times, many times. We make these offerings, the little plates of many items on the altar. And after the offering is removed, generally if you're a Brahmin, you know what those items are, right? So you come down after prasada, after the work is over, looking, those items are there. Man, all of those special items are not to be seen. It's like, wow, what happened? How can in 15 minutes so much prasada get vanished? Hey, still, it's like a black hole. We don't know. Or the garlands or something, you know, some devotees they sponsor, or you know, you want to give them as encouragement, they get special mercy. You go look in the fridge, different garlands are there, but the special ones are vanished. What happened? This is not Purohit, this is Pura Ahita. So it's called Pura Ahita. Not making any benefit for others. This is almost like we are holding back mercy. Now it's not just Brahmins on the altar. The devotees who go out, or when we meet people, when we don't give, then we're holding back. And that's very detrimental to them and to us. From Prabhupada's purport perspective, in Bhagavad Gita, it's almost like violence. To not foster someone's Krishna consciousness, Prabhupada says, also violence. So something we should give. We should give Mahaprasadam, we should give a book, we should give some words by which their regular lifestyle has a different context or a perspective. Even if it's simple, nothing much. And if we don't have profound things to say, if we don't have life-transforming stuff to say, we can't give a book, if we can't do anything else, we can at least be warm and loving and welcoming them nicely, because that they don't get anywhere. People don't treat each other nicely. When we go out there, how do people treat each other? Bad, really. But if we can just treat them nicely, it's giving. It's giving of the affection we've received from the parampara. And that's very helpful. We should give. Should never hold back. That's the whole point here. And he says, prana and artha. By possessions and by our life. That means a devotee's life is committed to sharing. whatever they are receiving. There is a story of King Rantideva in the ninth canto. This is about sharing food or prasadam, but the spirit of sharing is very amazing. King Rantidev had performed some austerities. He was fasting. And his fasting was so intense that the word went up to the demigods that there is one king who's fasting in a very, very special way. He's very strict. At the same time, he's also very giving. He's very liberal in his giving. So the demigods decided to test him. So such and such, I may forget the details, the such and such day came that he was supposed to break his fast. So the cook had made some particular preparations and the king sat down to eat. And as the preparations were served, he was about to start when at his door a poor brahmana came. He was very weak, very skinny, and very tired. So the king's people, they kept the brahmana outside because they didn't want to disturb their king because he was just about to break his fast. But there was some commotion at the door, so he asked them, "What is going on?" "Oh, don't worry, don't worry, there's some brahman." The king said, "How can you not receive a brahmana? Our first duty is to receive, please, please let him come in." "So what is, my dear sir, how can I serve you?" "Oh, my dear king, I haven't eaten in a long time." So the king said, "Oh, you've come at a perfect time. I was just about to honor this Mahaprasadam." So he gave away half to that brahmana. And although the brahmana was very skinny, he ate away half of prasadam. You know, it's not that only big people eat well, skinny people also eat well. And they ate like, so the king was like, "Wow, must be very hungry." So then when he sat down to eat the other half, a mlecha with his dogs came. I forget the order. Then someone else comes. The three people come anyway. Mlecha, an untouchable person with his dogs. And again, there was commotion at the door. The king said, "What's going on?" "Oh, no, no, how can we not serve these people? Please give them this prasadam." Even that was given away. So there was nothing to eat. There was only water left. The king said, "No problem. I'll just drink some water and satisfy myself." And when he was to do that, someone else came at the door. And the king said, "Give this water also away. I will not eat anything." Then they all manifest as demigods because they all were testing him one after the other. They were seeing what is the limit of this person's ability to give. And they could not find that limit. If someone were to find our limit, I think it's easy to find. But yet, the spirit of giving must be there. What, now it's not what, it's not only giving, but what we give. Mostly we give distress. We give distress unto others. By staying in Kali Yuga, the tendency is to give a lot of distress through our body, mind and words. But we are supposed to give solace from our body, mind and words. The first way of giving solace through our body, mind and words is to not react. We have a tendency to react. When something we don't like, or someone we don't like, we tend to give something out. Like we give an attitude, we give some words, we throw something, or we give them a, what we say, cold shoulder. That's what we do with the body, mind and words. Cold shoulder, attitude, and some insult. So first thing to do is to not give any of these things. Be neutral as much as possible. That's tough. But that's why we're chanting Hare Krishna in the first place. That's why we're hearing Bhagavatam. That's why we're serving the devotees. That's why we're praying to the deities. To not react to persons. That's the first level. If we can do that, we have done the world a great service. If we can stop giving more distress than there is in people's lives. Then the second thing, a higher level thing, is to do something with our body. Because body is gross. We are accustomed to doing things at the gross level. So we may do some service for them. In our mind, we may not feel full welfare for others. But at least from a bodily level, you know. We may serve prasadam thinking, how much he will take? When is the next guy going to come? Come on, move. Can I have some more? Really? Is that okay? Then we give them a little. Some more, Prabhuji. Some more. Oh, come on. But at least our body is serving them. The mind may not be serving. There was one devotee who, I guess, by Krishna's gift, has a wonderful appetite. So apparently he had stacked his plate high up like this, like a mound. So another devotee looked at it and said, oh Prabhu, are you packing for your whole family? And a fight broke out between the two. Because he felt insulted. So our bodies we use for serving. Then the next level is words. Next level is not just words, body and words. With our body we serve them, and with our words we say something uplifting. Uplifting doesn't have to be flattering. Sometimes we mix the two. Uplifting may mean flattery. Oh Prabhuji, you're so amazing. By your glance, everything is moving. This is a little flattery. This is way out of place. I'll tell you a joke about flattery. There was a beggar who was searching for something, some food or money. So he went to a rich man's house. And the rich man was sitting on his balcony up in the patio, and he was reading a newspaper. So this beggar thought, the best way to get him to give me something is to flatter him. So he said to the beggar, to the rich man, oh, great man, sir, when you sit like that on this wonderful chair with your one leg over the other reading a newspaper, you look like King Indra. So the man looked out from his newspaper, turned his head and called out to his wife and said, oh, my dear wife, bring this man $1,000. So this guy said, wow, it's working really well. Then he said, and your wife, she looks like Mother Sachi, right next to King Indra, the queen of the heavenly realm. And the man turned and said, along with $1,000, bring him that new wristwatch that I got. And he said, wow. And he said, you're so effulgent. You're considered so generous with such attitude. You're so generous that my heart is really feeling like I should dedicate my life in service to you. The man turned around and said, you also make sure you bring the big pot of gulab jamuns for this man. So he's like, wow, $1,000, wristwatch, gulab jamun. So he was waiting. A few minutes passed. Nothing, the wife didn't come. 5 minutes passed, she didn't come. 10 minutes, she didn't come. So he said, excuse me, sir. I'm wondering where all the gifts are. He said, what gifts? He said, I just thought you called your wife and said, you know, bring $1,000, the wristwatch and the gulab jamuns. So the man told him, listen, you said all these wonderful words and flattered me. So in return, I also said wonderful words to flatter you. Now we're done. You can go. I returned all the wonderful flattering words back to you. There's nothing for you actually. So flattery has no purpose. In fact, uplifting means those words by which we don't excite that false ego. Because once you excite the false ego, there's nothing you can do. Already the problem is the false ego. Then the third level of service is our body, words, and mind. Now that's the tough one. So we refer to Rishabhdev, who says, sadhavo vimanyava, sadhavo ye. Vimanyava is that they don't feel any anger towards the persons that they are helping. We feel angry. We feel disappointed. We feel betrayed. We feel insulted, etc. Therefore, Lord Chaitanya told us, amanina manadena. Which is very difficult. Manadena is very difficult. Amanina manadena is even more difficult. Manadena is not so difficult at some level. If someone gives us respect, it's okay, we can give them some respect. But amanina manadena is very difficult. No respect coming from the other side, but keep on giving. It's not just once, but keep on. Oh, that's tough. That's what we are asked to do. This is Purohita, actually benefiting others. So that is Vishwarupa. That's practical for me. Anyway, any questions or comments? Yes, Dr. Mike, and then Jitendra Prabhu first. I tried to look for an opportunity to tell you a joke, but I didn't get the context. But I'll say it to you anyway. Right? Why do we need a context for a joke?
Yes. I just remember one phrase Prabhupada said, don't think everybody's to your liking. And there was, when Prabhupada was in New York with Brahmananda, they were trying to acquire some property, and there was this man came, and he was like posing as a real estate person or something, and he would call Srila Prabhupada, Your Excellency. And then Brahmananda gave him a $5,000 down payment, and the man vanished. But he was very overbearing with his praise and flattery, and Prabhupada was... Do you remember the story?
Hmm.
Yeah. So Prabhupada, we should be very careful with people that are overbearing with gracious flattery. So that's something. Maybe you might have something to add to that.
I have a lot to add. I won't tell this story. Mike. Back to Mike.
You were talking about how devotees take a lot of risks.
Yes.
And preaching to others or giving advice. So I just made the connection with book distribution. Like, we take a lot of risks going out. And understand it's due to compassion that one might go out and preach like that. A lot of times, especially in the neophyte stage, we just do it as like my authorities tell me, or Prabhupada says, or my Guru Maharaj wants me to distribute books, something like that. We don't have the compassion. And that's, I feel like, what we need to continue to do it.
Yes.
And I was just wondering how one can develop this compassion for others.
Well, Justin has more experience of being asked to do book distribution and the realizations from it. Well, it's the same thing, like we're chanting Hare Krishna and we're not having our body shiver and hair standing on end and tears. Of course, tears do come, but not for the right reasons. And for us, even a moment feels like 12 years or more. You know, after rounds and rounds, like, what? Only 15 minutes have passed after all this chanting that I've done. What's going on? So there's some semblance of truth in that verse for us, but in a whole different way. But we continue doing it because the acharyas have told us to do, one. Second, we see from their life that by giving, Krishna fills our heart with that compassion. Compassion is not just in the act of it. It's in the act of showing Krishna that we want to be his instruments. We want Lord Chaitanya to see, Lord Nityananda to see. So we do. And we don't just do, we also prepare properly. We prepare ourselves, we chant properly, we serve properly, we hear properly, we study, etc. So that we can also give properly. But we continue doing it. One, because it's an order of the spiritual master. But more than that, that order is meant to awaken compassion. Otherwise we can't do for anyone, anything. In fact, compassion is required to do something for our own self as well. It's called self-compassion. Taking care of our health, taking care of our sadhana, taking care of our life, putting it on track, is compassion that we show ourselves first. Charity begins at home, as they say. For a lot of people, charity ends also at home. That we were discussing yesterday. Greg was saying, a person may come in an Armani suit and drop a few coins. That's not charity. Of course, there were sound effects as well. Charity begins at home. It continues from home outwards. It doesn't end there. But we do it day in and day out. Okay? All right. I should say this joke anyway. It has nothing to do with class, it's just for laughs. So we were discussing at lunchtime yesterday. So there was a wife and husband. I always like wife and husband jokes because they teach the most lessons for me. So there was a couple who had a very nice relationship. They never fought. So one of the friends, his friends, the man's friend, he comes and says, "Why? How is it that you and your wife don't fight? It's just very interesting." So the man says, "Well, in our household, we live by a policy. And that policy works very well for us." So, "Oh, what's the policy?" He said, "It's very simple. My wife, she makes all the small decisions at home. She makes all the small decisions, and I make all the big decisions. So we never have a conflict." So the friend said, "Wow, that's really cool. That's really nice. You have it so clearly laid out. Can you give me an example of what those kinds of decisions are?" He said, "Oh, very simple. You know, like small decisions like which house to buy, which car to buy, how much money to invest in different commodities, etc. Those small things, my wife decides. And big things like whether Israel should move out of the Gaza Strip, whether India and China should go on war or not, those things I decide. And my wife never interferes in my decisions. So our household is very peaceful." Anyway, thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.
Thank you.